That was very funny, Peter Roth. That always started out with a joke. You think you could have that like Seinfeld scene where George does the great joke and just leaves?
All right,
on that note, I want to welcome everybody to the world, according to that man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. Sorry we're a little late to the party tonight.
Very late, and I will explain to you why, if I may. Your humble servant, Mwah, lost his phone, which I do all the time, but also your humble servant, Mwah, has been agonizing, unimaginable pain all day from the knee surgery. It didn't quite work the way it was promised, and that has led me to be just dazed all day. And I am very sorry to my kind viewers and to Judah, our host and producer, and to Peter, our very kind colleague. God bless you, Peter, and God bless you, Judah.
Thank you very much, and very sorry about the pain. Pain absolutely sucks, and it is draining mentally and physically and spiritually.
Man, but it's the worst. It's terrible.
Terrible. But I do want to welcome everybody to the world, according to Ben Stein. We are joined tonight by the man, the myth,
the legend in his own mind. You can say it.
From the Roth draft, Peter Roth. And I got to tell people, I just want to tell people that listen and watch and all that. Peter's actually, he's quite funny and he's really interesting person. He's great to talk to on the phone. He's a good man. He's a good father. He's a good husband. And he's a great grandfather.
All of these things are very high praise indeed.
Peter, and he's an exceptional writer. So that's who Peter Roth is.
Well, God
and
bless
of course,
you,
the show wouldn't be complete without that man, this guy, at Ben Stein, living legend, icon, iconoclast, man about town. Of course, he's an economist. He's an historian. He's a statistician. And he's a mathematician. Most importantly, he's a father, he's a husband, and he is a grandfather. And second, most importantly, he is the doctor, Benjamin Jeremy Stein.
God bless you. And I am the father of a young man who has an astounding gift for language. And I'm very, very, very impressed. I'm not, I don't know what to say, but he has managed to put together an amazing gift to write for writing a fine paragraph or many paragraphs that come out looking as if they had been written by Ernest Hemingway.
There you go.
Outstanding.
Outstanding young man.
Are you?
And
outstanding, and they are mild.
Ben, right off the bat, I was on the phone with Ben an hour ago when he still knew where his phone was. And
that's a very good point.
And by the way, don't you still have that thing on it? Oh, but that's the problem. If you have the tablet on your phone, if you lose your phone, you can't find your phone. They got to figure out another solution for that, like a reverse tablet. But Ben,
I think if they just put them on cords and attach them to the wall, we'd never lose them.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea.
I agree with you. Go old school. But Ben, one of the titles of the show tonight is Guess Who's Coming to Dinner in New York. And, which is the migrants, Ben. And if you're people that are not familiar with this story, I originally
now tell the story because I myself did not know the story. And you, Judah M. Friedman, filled me in on when you said it to me. I couldn't believe it was real. I thought you must be making this up as a gag, but no, it's not a gag.
Well, originally, okay, I'll sum it up like this. Originally, I wanted to name the show Republicans Have Been, the Republicans Should Sue California for being kidnapped. But then I was thinking about New York City as I was on the phone with you, and I was thinking that Mayor Adams yesterday, who was appointed mayor on merit, he suggested that illegal immigrants live in people's residences. And
wait a minute, back up. You did mention this on the phone a short time ago, and I assumed you were joking.
No, I'm not joking at all. And then today,
how could they possibly arrange that? I mean,
because he lives in, because Ben, liberals are very open and they're very kind and giving people, and he, of course, assumes.
And New York apartments are notoriously spacious.
and notoriously inexpensive.
That's exactly right. And so today he offered up Gracie Mansion.
And I think it's a great idea.
I actually think that would be a fantastic idea too. Tons of bunk beds inside Gracie Mansion. And what a great optic for the greatest.
They could do what the Navy does on submarines and rack them all.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
That means that you get 8 hours in your bunk, and what is it? 16 hours out of your bunk. So the bunk is constantly occupied. So every 8 hours, a different group of people comes in to sleep.
I don't know if that sounds sanitary.
You know, I put the show up on the wrong channel.
Okay, we're here.
I put the show up on the wrong channel.
Shall we pause while you redirect it? Or?
I can't redirect it at this point. And so I was wondering why there are so few viewers, because it's on the wrong channel.
Well, Brady, I wonder if my wifey is watching.
Well, she has the correct. She has the correct link. So I don't understand why, what the heck I did here, but anyways, go on. I'll upload it later on the regular channel.
But Ben, that's what they do on submarines, because a submarine has to be in operation around the clock. So one shift is working, one shift is relaxing, and one shift is sleeping. And every 8 hours they switch. I believe they call it racking.
Well, I think I've heard it called other things, but I don't know. Well, God bless us. God bless us, every one of us. And I live right next door to West Hollywood, and they have other names for that practice. So we love them all. They're all great. And if my wife is watching, that's all that counts for me. I have one wife. That's it. That's one wife, and that's it. And otherwise,
it is
the rest of the world doesn't matter that much.
That you know, the Third Amendment to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, prohibits the quartering of troops in private homes during peacetime. Particularly in Boston and New York, the British troops used to show up and say, "Hi, we're moving in," and the colonists didn't like that. But it says nothing about migrants, and I wonder what would happen if, rather than just have this as a suggestion, the progressives somewhere decided that this was actually going to become policy, it was going to become law. I wonder if individual homeowners could push
individual
back and say
what?
No.
Individual
homeowners.
Homeowners,
yes. Because people actually own the property in which the mayor thinks migrants should be allowed to inhabit. And you know, but the
I think you've got too many prepositions.
The question is profound. I mean, would you be allowed to divide up families?
Why not?
Well, because, you know, we were told during the border crisis, the ongoing border crisis, that it was wrong, for example, to separate children from their parents or whoever the adult was that was trying to bring them across the border. So could you put the adults in one building and the children in an unoccupied office building?
I don't know. The whole thing is incredible. Why? I guess I don't understand why they're allowed to come into the country at all. They don't have jobs or a place to work or income.
Because we have no borders, Ben. Ben, we ceded our right as America, and we opened up borders, and we have a country flooded. Ben, I'm not kidding. I sent Peter this story this morning about this new vending machine that they have in New York.
You sent it to me too. It's hilarious.
Oh, I sent it to you too?
Is that real or is that another joke?
No, that's a real vending machine that sells, wow. What is it, crack pipes?
Crack pipes and
needles, you know, because, hey.
Wow.
If you're going to kill yourself with illicit substances, you need to do it safely.
That's quite funny.
The assault on private property here, even the implied assault on private property here, bothers me. I mean, what about all those office buildings in Midtown Manhattan that are empty or half full because businesses closed during COVID? What is to prevent the city of New York from using its power of eminent domain to at least take over access to that space, saying that having the migrants wandering around the city with no place to go is a public crisis. And eminent we cite our authority of eminent domain, of clear state interest, to give them some place to stay. And they're actually, in effect, seizing private property from people.
And yet, nobody really does anything much about it. So we've sort of given up what might be called the cornerstone of a free country, which is the right of private property.
Yeah. I mean, I think of all the developers. I think of all the developers across America who, because things like rent control distort the reality of the marketplace in real estate, if they want to build an apartment building, they don't get permission from the government to do so unless they're willing to set aside a certain number of units to go to what's called low-income families.
Now, wait a minute, are we back to making jokes, or are we?
No, I'm quite serious about that. Well, it's not done through law. It's coercive. Because you have to go to the city to get approval to build your building or to do your development. And they say you have to have, you know, a quarter of the units have to be made available for low income families.
Now, what does in a city like New York, which is a city of very, very wealthy people, very, very, very wealthy people, what would be a low income family?
I'm sorry, I don't know the number. Let me go and see if I can find out.
I think you should. And please go on now, Judah, with the rest of the show.
Okay, sounds like a plan. I don't know if you saw this story, Ben, today, but this is interesting. It just shows you it's quite comical. I don't know if you saw that the LIV, which is the golf tournament owned by the Saudis and the PGA, decided to merge, and they will be using Saudi money. That evil, bloody, dirty Saudi money, Ben, and it's sort of fast. It's amazing. The owner, I mean, the head of the PGA, was last year saying, you know, because the 9/11 victims have been so against this, how he was saying we stand with the 9/11 victims. I guess it's until you get Saudi money, and I found that
changes everything.
It ratings and Saudi money change everything, Ben.
Everything.
And
everything.
I just thought it was it's
heart rendering, as my wife would say.
Heart rendering. Yeah, no, it's very heart rendering. And I just found it to be one of those things. I just found it to be, in a sense, interesting, and because capitalism is what's most important.
And capitalism is the essence of a free society. It's capitalism. It's really hard to imagine a free society that is not capitalist.
But I'm saying we decide all the time. We make these deals that we could do business with them, which is China, but we can't do business with them. And it's sort of a I don't want to say a hypocritical thing, but it just shows you that there shouldn't be a moral compass when it comes to business, but it should be about business for the most part, is making money for your shareholders and worrying about that.
Wait a second, something just happened here. What happened here?
No, sir, I'm just saying, you're okay?
Yeah.
You're good.
Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Saying it's a trick. Listen, I don't blame the PGA for what they did. I think it's obviously the right decision in their best business interest for whoever it is. My point being is I wish all businesses were doing that. And I wanted to ask you, when did it start that businesses started taking these approaches? Obviously with everybody inundated with gay pride and taking up social causes. When did this happen?
I do not know. That's a very good question. I don't know, but it's been going on for a long, long time. And the fact that people found that they could attach themselves to what seemed to be a socially uplifting and redemptive project, and at the same time, at the very, very, very same time, be making tons of money from dealing with a regime that until quite recently allowed slavery in its own country. That's fascinating. I mean, money talks. That is the amazing thing. Money talks, 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 talks. And money doesn't talk, it swears. Obscenity, who really cares? Propaganda, all is phony. Wait a second, hold on a second. Go outside to the front door, quick, and get Dr. Pepper.
All right. Inside here?
Outside the front fucking door.
Speaking of money talking, my quick internet survey appears to say that in New York State, for purposes of housing, low income is determined is set at $70,000 for a family of four.
Mm-hmm. Low income?
It's considered low. You're eligible for low income housing support if you're a family of four with an income of $70,000.
I don't know what to make of that. Why not? I mean, why not?
I would imagine, Ben, it's the same thing if you're working in Beverly Hills and making 70 grand and you wanted to move into Beverly Hills, you would be considered low income.
Very, 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 very low
income. I think you'd be considered no income.
I think so too. I really do. It's an amazing world. As I say, the money is just a breathtakingly important factor in human life. Breathtaking. And Jude, I don't know whether you or Peter said it warps and distorts everything, but it's absolutely true. And the power that money has is simply incredible. I mean, and it's just mind-boggling.
You're right, and you've written a number of good articles and books on the subject, and it boggles my mind that we don't spend more time teaching young people about money.
Well, that's a very good point.
In the public schools, all the things that we teach them, we don't teach them economics, we don't teach personal finance.
No. This is where
we don't teach investing.
Peter, we do. We just teach them that it's the bad people that are in charge of the system. That's what's being taught now. It's not being taught that capitalism is great, Peter. It's being taught, as Ben has written for the past 50 years, that the big bad boogeyman are the capitalists.
Right.
As a matter of fact,
I hope we're not getting back into racism again.
Well, not at the moment, but our mutual friend John Fund sent me a link the other day. I believe it was the Colorado Teachers Association at their annual conference approved a resolution condemning capitalism.
Wait a minute. I never heard about this either. Where did you find this?
John Fund sent it to me. I'll have to find it and send it to you.
Wow.
But they apparently passed a resolution condemning capitalism.
I don't even know what to make of all this. It's interesting. Wifey, also known as Big Wifey. Big Wifey and I spend night after night watching Perry Mason from the late 50s, early 60s. And it seems like nothing has changed since I was a child. But then when we step out of that world into the world of 21st century, capitalism, hate, fear, envy, jealousy, violence, racism, real racism, not fake racism, then everything turns upside down and we're left in a world of where there is a vacuum of real ideas. All there is anger, fear, ignorance. It's terrifying. It's just absolutely terrifying. Just terrifying. Really, really terrifying. We are trying so hard in this great America, spelled with a K, to make life better for those who are poor and non-white. And all we do is get treated like dirt for doing it. I mean, it's just really, really terrible. I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I think Alex and I are probably, Alex is my wife, the world's most saintly and beautiful human being. I think we're going to probably have to move to another country called Idaho, and we'll just hide there until the FBI comes and gets us.
Yeah, Peter, he brings up a really good point, and he wrote a great, brilliant book called The View from Sunset Boulevard.
Was very kind of you to say that. That was a long time ago.
But it was still a brilliant book. And the reason I bring that up, Peter, is because I tend to watch, I don't watch old shows as Ben does, which is Perry Mason, because that was from his generation. I tend to watch shows
incompetent, irrelevant, and immaterial. And I
object. Right, exactly.
I tend to watch shows from earlier generations, from even from 15 years ago, and they've changed tremendously since then. There's been a massive shift for many a reason in television within
the last 10 years. I like that phrase, for many a reason.
In the last 10 to 12 years. I was watching a show from 2007 or 2014, and they did a whole article actually on it, that when Trump became president, there were a lot more American shows that were being shown. And obviously anything Jerry Bruckheimer does, he's always, you could pretty much count on it being pro-American, Peter.
But we love Jerry Bruckheimer. Loved him.
He's supposedly a great guy by all accounts. Yeah,
and a very close friend of my wonderful friend Michael Chinich.
Yeah.
And he's a very, very talented, brilliantly talented guy.
I was actually watching a movie he produced last night, Farewell My Lovely, 1975. Robert Mitchum is Philip Marlowe.
Yeah,
with the always beautiful Charlotte Rampling.
A very good version. And a very, very, very good version. Very good version.
And you want to know, by the way, just bringing him up, because I know people love to rag on Hollywood, and it's easy to, obviously, but there are some good guys, and Bruckheimer is one of them. And I think one of the coolest things that he still does is he puts the Simpson name before him. And
Don Simpson, let me just tell you, if you want to really see the work of a genius, you should look up Don Simpson. I mean, I had the incredible, unbelievable privilege and pleasure of working with him many a year ago. And I mean, there's an amazing genius and a rough, tough guy, led an amazingly interesting life. I mean, really, you can't quite believe what an interesting life he led. And yet we all knew he was going to die young because he was a gigantic drug addict. So it's just, I don't know what to say, but.
But my point is, I think it's still cool that there's people, Peter, like Jerry Bruckheimer, that when you watch Top Gun, how many producers would put his ex-partner and still give him the title credit in the biggest movie of the last God knows how many years, pretty much. When you take China, the fact that China, that Jerry Bruckheimer decided to take off, think about the guts it took Bruckheimer to put the Taiwanese flag on Tom Cruise's bomber jacket in the last Top Gun, Peter. That takes a lot of guts, Peter.
He was an amazing guy, very rich guy.
And by the way, it was a tremendous movie.
Which one?
It was a tremendous movie. It didn't preach at me. It was enjoyable. It was an escape from the reality of the world for a little while. It was everything a movie should be.
Well, I don't know what to say, except that you will not find many people who admire Bruckheimer more than this man looking at you right now.
No, I just think it's important sometimes to acknowledge that there are still some good people out there. And the last thing is, since this isn't a bridge show, we
ran late. No, let's go on. Let's go. We can run late. Let's run late.
Okay. So I wanted to bring up, there's a second probe going on.
A probe?
Yes, a probe.
Wait a minute.
Going somewhere, Ben?
Yeah. Are you guys going to be talking about
Pride Month? We're talking about Pride Month.
So yeah, but a second probe, is this going to be a barium enema?
It pretty much, that's what they've done to Trump for the past 7 years, and that's what they're doing now. Ben, you might want to lower the bag a little bit with the medications.
All legitimate medications for which I have a prescription. I'm not a drug dealer.
That's true too. But there's a second probe in Florida going on right now.
Wait a minute. This is pure police state Gestapo tactics. It's just shocking and incredible to me that this is really happening. It breaks my heart, and I don't know what to say. This great, great, great country, what happened? What the hell happened? And let me go back to the beginning. why would one single federal district court not one take up the election issues that were so salient and so persuasive in the last presidential election? Why wouldn't not one, why would one court take it up?
Right, you have,
not,
Peter,
not one.
Well, well, Peter, you're the attorney, Ben.
I know, yes, I am. And
you would have the answer, not me. I was confounded. Boy, by the number of cases.
You ask me a question and then I try to answer and you don't let me. Right?
Yes.
Okay, I will tell
your
you.
Show.
Okay, because it has to do with the fact of something called legal realism. And legal realism says that the way a case turns out does not depend on precedent or law or statute. It depends on whether the judge likes you or not, or the judge thinks you're cute, or the judge thinks you might be well hung, or just what on earth the judge is thinking of at that moment. So I respectfully.
Ben, you need to move a little closer.
I respectfully think, with all due respect, that we had a gigantic breach of the Constitution in the last election. And unfortunately, it's not getting any better. It was a really, really serious crisis, and it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And it's a really, really a dangerous thing for our beautiful, beautiful America. And to think what has happened in this beautiful America just in the last few years is almost unbelievable. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. How could, it was proved, it seemed to me, at least what I could see, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that in many districts, there are more people, more votes counted than there were people living in the district. And yet no judge would even touch it. They wouldn't even come close to touching it. That it seems to me, just if we started that, we are really, really in trouble about the Constitution.
Well, and Peter, to his point, he's completely right. And it's, I mean, obviously Trump's going to get indicted this week. I don't think there's
Wait a minute. You think it's obvious? I think you're right, by the way. But is it obvious, Jesus? Is it obvious?
I think it's very obvious, Peter. I think his lawyers try to.
Then it's going to happen this week. I don't think it's obvious it's going to happen this week. But I think that Martin eventually will indict for
Smith.
Trump violating the Hillary Clinton rules.
Yeah.
He'll be indicted for the very same things that Hillary Clinton did and did not get indicted. Is that correct?
He'll be indicted for what everybody seems to have done, which is have classified documents in their house. But Peter, the bigger point is that we have to face the reality
Spit it out.
There's no good ending, Peter, to this thing because if
there is no good ending. It is the prosecutorial state run amok. It is
heart-rending, as my wife would say.
It is heart-rending. It is constitution threatening.
It threatens
the basic protections that Americans have been supposed to rely on since the country was founded. I don't have to incriminate myself. And the Justice Department seems, and I don't know when this started, but they seem to have taken the position that saying you have to prove I'm guilty, which is my right as a citizen to be presumed innocent, is obstruction of justice. That if you accuse me of something and I don't admit it, I'm obstructing justice. That there's selective justice for the rich, there's selective justice for the poor, there's selective justice for the political class. And it is just disturbing to me that people don't want to take this on.
I understand why,
because the people...
It's a gigantic, gigantic catastrophe in terms of the Constitution. It's a gigantic catastrophe in terms of the Constitution. What the hell is going on? I mean, if nowadays we have thrown away the Fifth Amendment, that is a hell of a big thing to throw away. And if we're now saying to Americans, there is no more Fifth Amendment, sweetheart, if there is no more Fifth Amendment, that is a gigantic slap in the face to every American, from the lowest sharecropper to the mightiest, richest ex-president, supposedly a billionaire. That is a mighty giant slap in that man's face, and that's very, very, very frightening. I mean, the whole idea of the Constitution was to protect the citizens, not to protect the prosecutors, but to protect the citizens. If we are going to just say to the citizens, forget it, we told you we were going to protect you from the tactics of George III and the tactics that led people to be tortured, literally tortured, hung upside down, and tortured until they confessed crimes that they may have had absolutely nothing to do with, we have really, really taken some very serious steps away from the Constitution of the United States of America. Nobody seems to notice that or even care about it. Why? Why does that?
Well, if you don't know what's in the Constitution, you don't know how far you moved away from it, which is why my friend, the actress Janine Turner, I don't know if your paths have ever crossed, she and Kathy Gillespie started an organization called Constituting America to teach the Constitution to young Americans, what it is, what it means, and why it matters to them, so they can carry it forward.
Yes, but getting back to... And that would be a wonderful, wonderful project to be involved in. I think it's brilliantly important. I think brilliantly, brilliantly, brilliantly important idea. If we can get young Americans to understand why we have the Constitution we do, why it is that's important that the government is not able to beat your brains in to make you give up your constitutional rights, we are really, 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 really looking for trouble. I mean, we have got to step way far back and ask ourselves, is it really that important to us to abuse Trump? Is it more important than keeping the Constitution?
What they're doing to Trump, they can do to anybody. But
They can and they will.
And I wanted to ask you about this whole question of standing. Most of the election cases filed by the Trump campaign and its allies were never heard.
I know.
Because the judges decided that the people bringing the suits didn't have the standing to sue, that they were unable to explain why they were a party to this case, why they were bringing the case, that they didn't have the right to seek redress in court.
If you don't have
the right to seek redress in court, then what do you do?
Well, exactly. And if the courts do not understand themselves why it is that there are severe restraints on prosecutors, then we're really in very, very deep trouble. I mean, what do we have in the Constitution if the Constitution is not holding back, restraining prosecutors from doing any damn thing they please in order to get a conviction? We're in real serious trouble. And where do we go from here?
But in this case, I'm not talking about the prosecutors. I'm talking about the citizens. If I'm running for office and my campaign loses and I suspect voter fraud and I'm able to produce evidence or what I claim to be evidence of voter fraud, how can a judge say, I don't have standing to sue? I'm the injured party.
At least I allege that I'm the injured party. I mean, if you allege that you're the injured party and the court says, no, we've decided you can't possibly be the injured party without even having a hearing about it, what the heck? What can it possibly mean to have a court, to have a courtroom? If the injured party, namely the citizens of America, cannot say, look, you did not hear our case. You did not hear what we said, which is that our rights as citizens were taken away from us. Wow, are we in trouble? Wow, are we in trouble?
To a bigger point, though, what Ben's bringing up, Peter, is Trump's attorneys wanted to set up a meeting with Garland and the DOJ and they got a meeting, I guess, but Merrick Garland wasn't there, nor was his second in command at the meeting. So he couldn't even get a meeting. The former president of the United States couldn't even get a meeting to talk about his case with the attorney general. And
it's astonishing. It's just astonishing.
Peter, that is an absolutely frightening thing.
Well, especially when you think about Bill Clinton sitting on an airplane talking to Loretta Lynch, the attorney general of the United States under Barack Obama, while Hillary was under investigation by the Justice Department. And we now know that there were 4 open investigations that were quashed by the Obama Justice Department as Hillary was preparing to run for president in 2016. Gee, I wonder if the tarmac conversation had anything to do with that. I guess we'll never know, because none of us have standing to sue to find out.
Well, wait a second. Or you might say, we already know. That's another way of looking at it. We already know. I mean, we already know that if the president of the United States is going to be sitting next to the top law enforcement official in the country, or one of them, and telling him what he thinks he should go forward with, what he thinks he should not go forward with, we've really lost a tremendous amount of the protections of the Constitution of the United States. I mean, let's back up. What was the Constitution about? It was about protecting citizens from the government. That's all been tossed out the window. I mean, how did that happen?
You know what this feels like? Can I be honest what this feels like? Because I'm with the story with the FBI not willing to release these documents. This really feels like just a bunch of dirty cops. It feels like we're watching a dirty cop movie where they're not giving over the informant because there's an ongoing investigation with a supposed ongoing investigation that's been going on for 5 years into the Bidens that we're never going to see this. It's just the FBI, the DOJ, I hate to say it, and I know people say it's just it goes so much deeper than just the top. And I love listening to people change their minds. It's just the rank and file. Now it's 90% of them are good. How the hell do we know that 90% of them are good? Ben, we have a bunch of dirty feds running around, and I hope to God Congress puts Ray in contempt of Congress. And you know what? Have enough guts, and I hope Comer does it. I believe he will. I believe Jim Jordan will, God willing.
But you know what that means,
Judah? Well, you're just interrupting Judah.
No.
He's the host of the show.
He's joking, Peter. Go ahead.
If they find Ray in contempt of a congressional committee, they forward it to the contempt citation to the Justice Department for action.
Yeah.
Merrick Garland.
That's my point about it being a
dirty. It's heart rendering.
That's my point about it being a dirty cop movie, Peter. It's like everybody is in on the grift. Everybody is in on this cabal and this scheme. There's nowhere to
terrifying.
Go that you could get justice. And I don't know what the solution is. I mean, what is the solution? Why do we not vote? We vote for sheriffs. Every county in America votes for their sheriffs. Why not have us vote for the head of the FBI? Why not have us vote for certain positions?
Because we thought at one point that the post itself was so prestigious that no one would dare even consider going against the public interest and going in favor of their own private interest and their own private friendships and colleagues, rather than even take the slightest chance of behaving in the interest of their friends. We thought that could not possibly happen, but it's happening all the time. And I think, Judah, your point is a dirty cop movie is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant way of putting it. It has devolved into a dirty cop movie. And yet I am a fan of Biden, and I'll tell you why. Because he's helping out the Ukrainians, and I think that is an incredibly important thing he's doing. And I'm not going to take that away from him. He's doing something very brave and wonderful for the Ukrainian people who really are being massacred, gang raped, tortured, buried alive because of communist butchery. And he has stood up against them, against the communists, which are now called Putin, new Russian Republicans, or whatever they're called, And I give him credit for that. I really am going to say he can do an awful lot of other bad things, and I'm sure he will. But he has already stepped forward into the limelight of extraordinary courage by doing what he's done.
This is where I don't disagree with you on the fact that we do need to help Ukraine. I don't think he's done much to help Ukraine. I think he's the reason that we are in this position in the first place is because of his weakness. There is no Ukraine war if we don't leave Kabul the way we do and set in motion a series of crazy events. What exactly has he done to help Ukraine? I mean, yes, he's given them weapons.
That's a hell of a thing. He's given them a lot of weapons and very good high-end weapons.
Let's not forget that had he done that before, when they actually knew that there was a war imminent, that it might have turned out differently. But they all assumed that Ukraine would fall in 10 days, and they were okay with that. I think it's very important to remember that they were going under the assumption that this was going to be Crimea and it would be taken in a few days, Peter. And they didn't give a crap about Ukraine at that point.
I think you're right to presume that Putin and the others in the national security establishment in Moscow said that if the Americans aren't going to protect themselves in Iraq and Afghanistan, then they're not going to protect Ukraine.
Right. I think that's exactly what they thought. But then what turned them around?
I do think that the West generally deserves credit for having rallied to the support of the Ukrainian people in their brave fight in this unprovoked, aggressive, horrible Holocaust that's being visited on them.
Absolutely.
Assistance, sometimes kicking and screaming. Some of it is stuck at the State Department, which for reasons that are a mystery to me have yet to approve things.
Well, I can tell you what the mystery is. These are horrible people.
I think the president has abandoned the leadership role he briefly took on this crisis. He doesn't talk about it much anymore. He doesn't do anything about it anymore. It's sort of off to the side. It's off the front page. And, you know, now he's busy, you know, falling all over himself, trying to win the approval of voters who are being attracted, strangely enough, to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
And we don't even know who he is. We don't even know who he is. And he's running for president on the strength only of the fact that had a fantastically rich great-grandfather and a rich and cool-looking and hung like, I guess, something. Bull, I guess is the phrase, or like the word. Father, grandfather. This is incredible what the Democrat Party has succumbed to. They're nothing now. They might as well just be players on some reality TV show.
They're a bunch of deflated sex dolls wearing empty suits.
Well, so am but I. So I don't feel bad about that.
But where we are, you know, where we are now, the New York Times had a piece that I'm this week that I am still dissecting, that millennials seem now to be moving to the right. I'm not sure it's correct, but it reminds me of what happened when my generation became of voting age. And the presidency we knew best, because it's the one we had experienced the most in a conscious sort of way, was Jimmy Carter. And we knew about high interest rates and high inflation and how tough it was for our parents. And we knew about the hostages in the Iranian embassy and the impotency of the US military and the just flatness of President Carter. And along comes this charismatic former actor, two-time governor out of California, who rallies us to the American cause and builds back the American economy and turns us into lifelong conservative Republicans.
And I think there's something to that.
That may be happening now.
Well, let's hope so.
I thought you were going to bring up the fact that the New York Times did the story today about that 10 to 20% of the Ukrainian army is neo-Nazis, and they I thought that you were going to bring up that story, but
I did not see that story. Yeah. I'm embarrassed to say that.
Yeah.
Was that on the front page?
It was reported by the New York Times today, so I don't get the New York Times, so all I could see is the story that the New York Times reported on with that one brigade, with many of the brigades that where the
brigadier.
They wear the different parts of the Nazi uniform, it's quite a few. I will send you the story.
That's,
and that was by the
story.
New York Times. And they also, the story came out today with our intelligence. And again, I'm not by any means defending Russia, but we know now pretty much that Ukraine is the one that bombed the pipeline. And so much for intelligence. And we are in this mess, Ben, so much because of how bad our intelligence became. Because our intelligence agencies went after Americans and we're not paying attention to what was going on around the world, we're in these messes. And because for 6 years our intelligence community went after Trump and the FBI went after Trump and spent pretty much probably all their assets on going after Republicans, they didn't see stuff coming, Ben.
No, they didn't. All right, now I must stop. It's been a long day. It started out with me having incredibly bad colitis. And both Judah and I know what that is. That's where you get to spend a lot of time in your bathroom listening to on your XM radio to songs from the 50s. And you enjoy your time doing it.
Plus, you know one of the hosts lives in your building.
I mean, Neil Sedaka.
Neil Sedaka, baby.
We love him. And also another one of their hosts, Pat Boone, is another friend of mine.
And he's a good Republican, I think,
Pat Boone. A very good Republican.
If I'm not mistaken. Okay, so on that note, I want to thank everybody for listening to The World According to Ben Stein. And the one thing I hope we do is we make you question and ask and think about hard things, because there are conversations that aren't always comfortable to have, but you have to have them. And it's so important that they be done correctly and in the right way, and with respect and dignity and honor. And Ben Stein taught me that.
And I would like to say one more thing before we go off into the eternity of the ether. And that is, if I may, I got to spend a very large part of the day today lying in bed, holding the hand of the most wonderful human being in the world, Alexandra Denman Stein, who is a living, breathing saint, an actual goddess. And her nurse was right nearby, Gemma, whom we love very, very much as well. And we just are blessed as springtime.
100%. Peter Roth from the Roth Draft. You could find him. He's a contributor, managing editor, contributor at Newsweek.
Editor.
What?
Contributing editor.
Contributing editor at Newsweek, The Daily Caller, pretty much. So many publications, and he is, I don't want to say it tonight. I'll let you off the hook, Mr. Roth. And he's just an all-around good man. He's a great father. And of course, America's humble servant, America's teacher, America's professor, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. We are blessed that we get his wisdom. I'm sorry I put the show on the wrong channel tonight. I'll upload it to the right channel after we're done with this. And we'll see everybody on Thursday night with that Mandy Gunasekera. Peter might be joining us for the party and our all-star panel. But Ben Stein, take us out however you want.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Judah. Happy birthday to you. I know it's not your birthday, but you know what? That is the single most played song in the world. And I think we are the most played people in the world. So that goes right for us.
I just want to say one thing. Sorry. And first of all, I want a 30-second video if you don't mind when you're done. Please. But I just want to say something.
It's D-Day.
And Peter will understand this. It is very important to call your friends and check in on them. It is very important
to
call
people. Well, I do that to you all the time.
That's why I'm bringing this up. And I do that to you. And Peter, I've added to the rotation. And it's very important to do those things. They always say at the end of everything, you know, every suicide story, you know, call your mental, you know, every time there's something reported, call friends. Okay. Call your friends, call people you love as much as you can, as often you can. You don't know how long they're going to be around. Tell them you love them if you can. And even if stupid stuff has happened, make amends. Life is too short.
Oh boy, is that ever true?
There's no need.
Is that ever true? That is so effing true.
And Peter's a new grandfather. Ben's a grandfather. It's so important. And just want to say thank you for everybody that's going to be watching this later on, and everybody that's going to be listening to this later on. God bless you, and God bless this great country. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see everybody on Thursday night.
God bless you all.